Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Thisky Discussions. I'm your host, AB Vasson. The international break is over and domestic football will return to our screens this weekend. There's an exciting round of Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers across the African continent. Algeria, Senegal, Mali and Tunisia punching their ticket for Cameroon 2022. I'm excited to discuss all of this and more with SABC journalist and African football expert Velile Mnyandu. Velile, thanks for joining me. We've just come off a very busy week on the African continent with AFCON qualifiers. South Africa were involved in back-to-back games against Sao Tomo and Principe in South Africa and Durban and Port Elizabeth respectively. Let's start at home. What did you make of the first two games, of our two games, you know, in South Africa, against a team, you know, ranked 182nd in the world? In the end, we got 6 points, which matters most. But how does it bode for the rest of the qualifying campaign?
Well, thanks, AB. Thanks for the invite and thanks for the opportunity to be here. Look, if you've been following the AFCON qualifiers, there was a time when you talk about teams like Djibouti, you talk about Comoros, you talk about Sao Tome and Principe, you talk about a number of these teams, even your Madagascar to an extent. You can say even Equatorial Guinea for that matter, you know. You will just look at running over them. But if you look at not even just these qualifiers, even before this, you know, I will take you back to the AFCON, and you saw what Madagascar did there. They didn't only top their group, but they also shocked Nigeria as well. They beat Nigeria in the final tournament. Now, we're not just talking about qualifiers. So, African football has moved away from that premise of if a team is ranked 116th on the rankings and 160th, it just becomes an easy team. No, it's not easy like that. And you saw with the application of a team like Sao Tome and Principe, you know, because they know that they've got their strengths, and their strengths was on the aerial balls. It was on the physicality. It was also on the pace. If you saw how they were using their pace on the wings, especially how they were targeting their left hand side, our left hand side of the defense in the first game, and how they were emphasizing on the aerial balls. Both goals coming from a set play, the first game, in the first goal in the second game. And bear in mind, they're also scoring for the first time. But I would also like to take you back to their second game, which they lost to Ghana. They only lost it by 1-0, you know. And that was through a penalty in Ghana. So that's why sometimes when I read and listen to the statements that it's a foregone conclusion that Sudan will beat them in Sao Tome and Principe. I say, wait, are people following football? But I, you see, generally, I think this is just, it's my personal opinion. It's always been my view that in South Africa, maybe as journalists also were guilty, but also even our people, we don't seem to follow. And sometimes I listen to even people when they analyze the game on the African continent. They don't do that with a bit of authority because people don't really seem to know what is happening out there, especially outside South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, for me, even when, if we are going to meet a North African country or even a West African country, you'll find that besides the players that are playing in Europe, we don't seem to have much detail on who we're going to meet. You understand? And what goes on there? And sometimes I feel that if I look at the reactions of even playing against our tournament principal, I knew, even before we played against them, that you cannot take them lightly. You understand? You cannot take them lightly because the fact that a formidable team that beat us 2-0 in Ghana struggled to win in Sao Tome and Principe, it tells you that there is something. But obviously, when it comes to quality meeting quality, if you can see how we're missing the chances in the first game, especially in the second game, so those are the areas where we need to capitalize.
Yeah.
But we cannot dismiss the teams because they are ranked very lowly in the FIFA rankings, and we dismiss them as, you know what, we need to run all over them. Mm-hmm. African football has long moved away from that.
We saw that with Sierra Leone over two legs against Nigeria, that incredible game in Benin City, 4-4. Do you think as South Africans sometimes we are a bit guilty of rating ourselves too highly? And on the back of that, how do we get to the level where we have players like a Riyad Mahrez, a Hakim Ziyech, a Mohamed Salah in our team running the show? I mean, if you look at Algeria, for example, you know, they're 22 games unbeaten now, which includes their run to the AFCON title. Do you think, how long will it take us to reach that level? And do you think we've got the capacity to reach that level? Do we need to have more players in Europe? How do we get it right?
It's a very interesting question that you're asking me, because there used to be a time when the Egyptian team was dominated by a squad of locally based players. Mm. And this is at the time when even Egypt was winning AFCONs back-to-back. But things have changed now. But also, you will also acknowledge that this is the period where they were also struggling to qualify to the World Cup. You know, in 2010, they came very close to qualifying to the World Cup. Obviously, I think Algeria upstaged them there. But then again, eventually they went to the World Cup, Egypt, in 2018. But this is the time when the likes of Mo Salah, the Trezeguet, you know, these are the players who have been playing in Europe, but they moved away from that. And also, it's well and good to look at how this Algerian team has came back now, especially if you look at the team that went to the 2014 World Cup, you know, and the team that they have now. I mean, Jamel Belmadi, I think, is one on what? Is it 23 games unbeaten now?
Yeah, 22, I think.
Yeah, 22 games unbeaten now. I think the last game they lost was an AFCON qualifier against Benin, you know. But if you follow, Algeria has also struggled in the past, you know. In fact, I think before Belmadi, they changed four coaches, you know, in a space of 2 years, if not 1 year, you know. So it's not something that just came up like this, you know. I think one of the challenges we having in South Africa is to the majority of our team is locally based players. And when I look at this, South Africans, they are still divided based to their club allegiances. Mm. And we have this tendency of overrating our players when they play at their clubs. And when it comes to the national team, we expect them to perform miracles. You know, and, you know, I sometimes look at the comments that will say when Bafana Bafana is in camp, and people will say they can't wait for local football to start. But these are the same players who are in the national team, and then they're going to come back. You understand? So it means that there is something that is missing in terms of quality at local level, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And because, look, for other countries in Central Africa, in East Africa, in West Africa, it's every player's dream there to go and play in Europe, you know. But for a certain player to go and play in Europe, the money must be good, because he's coming from an environment where it's easy for a certain player to get close to 2 million rand a season, you know. I will tell you about the situation of one player who moved from Belgium back to the local league and came here to earn almost three times what he was getting in Belgium. Would a player from West Africa or East Africa do that?
No.
Because, see, so there are a lot of factors. There are a lot of factors. And the factors, you have to break them down, you know, because these are very important. Someone like Yaya Toure, you know, someone like Michael Essien, didn't just move from Ghana or Cote d'Ivoire and move straight to a French league or to an EPL. They move to the Ukrainian leagues, you know. They move to some small leagues. Would a second player do that? You understand? So, so now, what does this mean? It then means that if, as the PSR, we are this competitive commercially and in terms of retaining our players, the best thing we must do now is to produce a quality player, is to have strong technical platforms. You understand? You don't have a situation where, and this is where for me, I brought up the point this week that at the club, if your coach doesn't even have a minimum requirement in terms of the coaching qualifications needed, in terms of a skilled training of coaching, and they're internationals at this club, what do you expect will happen? You know? So, hence I'm saying all these factors, you know, then they then inform this situation. But also coming back to your point now, we also have that element of sometimes we overrate ourselves, you know, and we don't know what's happening outside South Africa, you know, and we feel that what's happening here within our cocoon is the best, you understand? And for me, these are all these things. So in an ideal world, is that Bafana Bafana should be represented by players who are playing at a very high level, standard in Europe. But then you'll ask me a question again, how many players do we have who are playing regularly in your EPL, in the La Liga, in the Bundesliga, you know, just those three.
Yeah.
I know we like to talk about the top five, but just those three. I've not mentioned Serie A, you know. So, and then the countries that we are talking about now, the Teranga Lions, Algeria, you just look at their squad.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the Champions League week in, week out, you know. And if we don't have those players, at least the players must then be players who are constantly playing in the quarterfinals or semifinals of the CAF Confed or the CAF Champions League. And how many of our clubs do that? You know, so I think it's high time that we seriously need to have an honest conversation about the standard of our football. You know, and how do we make sure that we keep it at a high quality level.
You touched briefly on coaching licenses, and I think we can also touch on club licensing. We've seen a lot of status selling in South Africa. I mean, TS Galaxy are new to the league. We've got obviously Swallows FC have bought a status. AmaZulu are in a different form. Now we can go on and on and on. How bad is that for the South African game? And not just the club licensing, but coach licensing. You know, we saw on Twitter this week that there's a certain coach that has taken over at Baroka FC. And we've seen it, that same club in the past where, you know, we've questioned the coach's licensing. How important is it that we get that right? And then obviously going further than that, getting youth structures right. Because at the end of the day, we need to nurture these players. And if it doesn't start at club level, where is it going to start?
It's a very interesting point that you're bringing, you know. And for me, I've always maintained that whilst commercially we are one of the best leagues on the continent, if not the best, but when it comes to the technical vision, you know, and sometimes I wonder how this even dominates the talk of those who are in power, you know, the footballing side of things, you know. It's just one area that for me is worrying me, that we don't seem to be prioritizing it. And I think the issue of club licensing, yes, it becomes very important, yeah? And I know that our club licensing is rated highly on the continent when you look at, because club licensing, I think it's got five key pillars, you know? It's the financial side, it's the legal side, it's the infrastructure, but also it's got the sporting element, you know, which is the footballing side. And this is where I feel that that's where we're failing. We're very poor in that space. Be it at SAFA or be it at PSL, that's one area. But the issue of selling of statuses, and fortunately at SAFCHA we have a series of online pressers. And one of the online pressers, we've hosted some current and also ex-members of the PSL Exco, you know. I remember we had a former PSL member, Exco member, Jose Ferreira. And I personally raised this matter to him. Said, for me, one thing you must understand, AV, I come from an area in East London, in the Eastern Cape, where I've seen, especially with bushbucks, you know, and I've seen what the lack of funds and what it would do to a football club, you know, like bushbucks back then, but also maybe with bushbucks, not lack of funds, but maybe a bit of infighting as well. But I'm also privy to how people will be using family business, you understand, to run the club. And if you don't do that, it's got a potential to even collapse the club. The club goes bankrupt and everything I should be with it is gone, you know. So the PSL model allows for the buying and selling of statuses, you know. But one of the things that even Jose was saying, that they it becomes a sticky and a tricky point for them as well, to say, how do you balance now? You know that there's this financial challenges, but also now, this is a club. I mean, if you take, for instance, a club like Bay United, which was bought in Polokwane, it became Polokwane City.
Yeah.
It's moving from 2,000 kilometers from that other side of the country to up north, you know? And this is a club which, in fact, was also bought as a Maritzburg in KZN and moved to the Eastern Cape. And you find that in all these areas that are moving, it's not just becoming status now, you know, on paper, but it's a club which has got a base and has built some following, and all of a sudden, things must change just like that. So, for me, that balance is still what is missing. I know ideally, we want to see what happened to AmaZulu, you know, which was just a change of ownership. And also, yeah, it's important in this year as well. It's very important this year because there's been COVID-19. Because I've heard people saying, but, I mean, these clubs were doing nothing. There was no football being played during lockdown, you know. No one had to be paid, or no, there were no flights or accommodation. But there were salaries to be paid, you know. And I don't know how many times we've emphasized that the two million or 2.2 million of the monthly grant, it is not enough. It is not enough to sustain a football club. You know yourself, AB, you've worked at a football club, you know. It is not enough. The business people running the club end up having to top up in terms of the operations of the our people about, you know, it's not an easy thing at all, this issue of the selling of the status. There are pros and cons to it, and I'm very conflicted because I can argue against it, But I can also argue for it.
Yeah. Moving on to club owners, you touched on there, obviously a very wealthy club owner in South Africa, Patrice Motsepe. He's running for CAF presidency. I read a very interesting article in the Daily Maverick written by Mark Leeson, who's obviously a very well known on the African continent, writing that Patrice has the backing of Gianni Infantino, giving reasons as to why. In your personal view, why would a guy like Patrice Motsepe, who, I mean, he's got his own wealth, he's got his finger in a lot of pies around the African continent and across the world, in fact. Why would a guy like him be running for CAF presidency, and do you see it as a good thing if he were to win?
Ah, very interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I think it could happen that Gianni has been dealing with a lot of these FA club presidents FA presidents for some time now. And he feels that when it comes to capacity, he's not content with what he's been getting from them. And also, you'll know very well that Gianni Infantino was very much involved in the ascendancy of Ahmad Ahmad to the current position that he holds now, you know. But back then, you will also recall that there was that policy at CAF that only those who are within the CAF Exco can stand for presidency. But now that the rules have changed, so he's opting for something different. There is a feeling in the footballing structures, especially on the continent, that it's not just Patrice who seems to be in the same area that Infantino is thinking about. There's also the Mauritanian Mohamed Yahya, you know, who's a plan B who's alleged to be a plan B for FIFA in case the plan of Petrus Motsepe doesn't come through, you know. So which also becomes another interesting one as well. But also remember, all of this is done with the premise of thinking that also due to the scandals which are surrounding the incumbent Ahmad, that come the 12th of March next year in Morocco, he will not be there on the final day going to the ballot, going to the ballot paper. But I think one of the things to seriously look at here is that there's a lot of power play around this thing. When this started, there's that council of zonal unions. In our case, it's COSAFA in Southern Africa. They came out to say they are fully behind Ahmad Ahmad, and they said there's about 46 FA presidents who are behind Ahmad. Remember, we've got 54 members in Africa who are members of CAF, 54 countries that is. But if you can count, or really the countries behind Motsepe, South Africa, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, Togo, Botswana, I think there are more countries to come up. And already Augustin Senghor from Senegal is already backed by Senegal. I think there's Gambia as well. There's Gabon. I think there's another fourth country backing him. And Mohamed Yahya, there are some few countries also backing him. Jacques Anoma as well. From Ivory Coast, I think there's three or four countries also backing him as well. And then you ask yourself, if that union or the zonal unions are saying there's 46 countries, so you see that you can't trust, you know. So, but these are the dynamics of African football. These are the dynamics of football elections, which is also politics, by the way. And also, if you want to see how strong is the candidature of Patrice Motsepe, Augustin Senghor of Senegal came out this week in what is seen as also lambasting this campaign of Motsepe, trying to position it as a campaign of because he's a billionaire, of just using money, but he doesn't have enough experience on a day-to-day running of the game at FA level or continental level. So now you could see that he knows who the front runner is, yeah, and who, yeah, you understand? So, but these are the politics. But you will also recall that in the past few years in particular, especially when CAF tried to bring closer the likes of Motsepe, the likes of Moise Katumbi, the owner of TP Mazembe, and this is when now Infantino got to be closer to these leading football club owners in Africa, and to an extent that if you recall that video where there was also Donald Trump as well, you know, so you could see, oh, okay, so there's been this close contact between Motsepe and Infantino, and you don't know some of the things that would have been discussed there, you know. So it's going to be very interesting. But whether he's in this for the long run, will he make it to the ballot paper, Motsepe? I don't know. In football, things change a lot. And is he really the right person to turn around African football? Even there, I don't know. But I think we must not take this lightly, because we don't know where it started. I remember hearing from some of those who are said to be in the campaign team, and they did say that they took long to convince him, but once he got convinced, he believed that this is the right decision that is taking. But I think there was an expectation also that he will not be challenged. Or if he's challenged, maybe it will just be him and Ahmad along the way falls away. But things have changed now. The script has changed now. Because even someone like Augustin Senghor is alleged to be someone who's came into the picture in case he's a plan B for Ahmad's camp. In case Ahmad doesn't go the long way, Augustin Senghor will inherit the votes which were promised to Augustin Senghor.
Yeah, all very, very interesting. Lily, if we could just finally touch on the big game in Africa coming up this month, CAF Champions League final. Not only big for Ahli, but I think big for a lot of South Africans because of Pitso Mosamani. Having, you know, worked in South African football for 8 years now, I mean, I worked a lot with Pitso, and it's incredible what he achieved at Sundowns. And I think we all feel, you know, a bit affiliated to him. And when he succeeds, I think as South Africans, we're quite patriotic and feel like we've succeeded as well. How do you see that game going? Al Ahly obviously are desperate for what would be a 9th CAF Champions League title. They've brought in a guy that has won it before. How do you see that match going, and how important is this for African coaches on the continent? You know, this is a line in the sand, so to speak. And, you know, Pitso can go a long way in opening the door for African coaches on the African continent.
They don't get bigger than this one. In Egypt, they already, in fact, long before he even reached the final, long before he even arrived in Egypt, when it was confirmed that he was coming, they were already calling him the 9th man. Mm-hmm. Now you must understand how they have always been looking forward to this 9th title. The last time Al Ahly won the title, it was back in 2013, and they beat a South African team, Orlando Pirates, you know. So they've been on that number 8 for a very long time now. It's been 7 years, and it doesn't happen that they wait this long to add. So already they call him the 9th man, and some, in fact, even go as far as saying they believe that he's also the man to take them to that magical double digits when it comes to the continental premium club competition on the continent, the CAF Champions League. And also, I think it really happens that these two giants also get to meet in this final, you know, in the CAF Champions League final. So there's a lot at stake here. Al Ahly has been dominating in Egypt, you know, but also I think, especially under Pacheco now, this Zamalek team is looking quite good. You saw how they brushed aside a stronger team currently in Casablanca, Raja, you know. So it's going to be a very interesting game. But it's also at a time when everyone around Al Ahly is raving about Pizzo, you know. Not only just taking them to the Champions League final, but also the brand of football that they are playing as well, you know. Because Egyptians, especially between those two clubs, it's people who are also conscious of the kind of football that they play, you know. Yeah. They don't just pay those big bucks to players for nothing, you know. So next week's game brings a lot of goosebumps, you know. Not only to us as South Africans, but to the entire sub-Saharan Africa, you know, to the number of coaches. Pizzo is just, I think, one of only few coaches on the continent who's currently enrolling for the inaugural CAF Pro license, you know. So when you look at Pizzo, when you look at coaches like Florent Dibenge, you look at a number of coaches, Jamel Belmadi, you know, around the continent, Ali Osise, you know, these are the coaches who are enrolling for that CAF Pro license, because it becomes the flagship of coaching on the continent. So to see a coach like that finding himself in this position that Pizzo finds himself in now, I think in terms of, even if maybe a prayer is something that can be bought, we're all buying those prayers, you know, for him right now, that he succeeds. Because when he succeeds, it is not just for him only. It's also for the millions of football players, millions of those who aspire to also play football, or to even coach, or even to work around football, or to manage, that Africans can also achieve this at the very highest level, that we don't need to ignore the talent, and we need to give our coaches a chance, you know. And for me, this is where if a coach like Pizzo can be given a chance by a giant in African football like Al Ahly, it also means that it's high time that we open our eyes as well here in South Africa and consider looking, because coaching is just like players. You need to scout for good coaches, you know. Sure. Even here locally, you need to scout for good coaches. You don't have to be a name to be a coach, because in South Africa there's this notion that you know, you must be known. And we must go and find good coaches. You can find a good coach and mold him, you know, from the ABC Motsepe, from the National First Division, or even from the lower divisions than that, you know, and groom a coach. And I think someone like Pizzo, whose certificates, by the way, are CAF and SAFA certificates, local certificates, you know. He might, in terms of the bigger pages, yes, he might have attended, because you know that from the formative stages of his coaching, he spent a lot of time also traveling to Holland, you know. Yeah. Yes, he might have spent time there and there in Europe. And also he played in Europe as well. That's why he started coaching in Greece as well. But you must also know that he's a proudly SAFA product when it comes to coaching. And so this is why I know that there's that debate. We opened with it, and I'm closing with it. There's that debate. And I was reading, in fact, I was even yesterday. And that's why one of the coaches, I think the former coach of Swaziland, De Jong, is coaching Platinum. So that's why. Because it's very clear there in the CAF regulations for Champions League and for CAF Confed that a coach must have a CAF license to coach in CAF matches.
Well, we wish Pizzo all the best. Velile, we appreciate your insight and your knowledge in the game. And I hope to see you in the stadium in the very near future. Stay safe and go well.
I hope that the PSL will soon allow us to be in the stadium and cover matches like we've been covering Junior Bafana Bafana matches. I think it's the right thing to do now. I mean, if we can practice issues of social distancing and all the other protocols that come with these regulations of COVID-19. So I see no reason why we can't attend matches. I know that the fans are also looking forward back, but I think as the media, because you must think about this, AB, how do we report about the game? The games are not even on TV. You know, how do we report about them? So now it means that if we can't report about those games and we're all guessing about what happened, then we're taking the standard back.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. Well, Velile, go well and stay safe, and thanks again for your time.
Anytime.
In next week's episode, we'll be joined by another prominent name in South African soccer circles as we preview the upcoming GLAAD Africa Championship season set to get underway in Cape Town on the 27th of November. If you have any questions or things you'd like us to discuss on Biscuit Discussions, please hit me up at AB_Basson on Twitter or on Instagram. Aware and keep safe.